Ancient wisdom, modern solutions, and Vilasi Venkatachalam present Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals, a dazzling kaleidoscope of cuisines, cultures, and cures, stories of wisdom, ingenuity, and the ways we create and connect. Part of the Woohoo Radio Network, this is the show where tribes gather, strangers and familiars, to explore the myths, the mystique, the old medicine, and brilliant modern solutions to create our own enduring, evolving legacy of healing. Traditions. The kaleidoscope of conversation begins now.
Yes. A beautiful day to all, and may this be the beginning of a restful, curious week. I'm Vilasi Venkatachalam, and welcome to the Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals, a place, a feast, and a quest, a place I hope filled with stories and memories of lives lived, discoveries of healing traditions, culinary cultures, our spoken heritage, fading memories, forgotten traditions, vanishing cuisines, so that nothing may be lost from significance. A feast, I hope, for your senses, a safari through scents and flavors around the world, an applause for human ingenuity in a quest for vitality, for connection, for celebration, for a feeling of wonder and reverence. And today we have a really extraordinary show with two extraordinary people from a very extraordinary illustrious community, the Zoroastrians of India or the Parsis of India. And we have with us today, before I say a little bit about the history and culture, Sharnaz Pettigara. She and her husband are the creators, Sarosh Pettigara, the creators of this beautiful sacred guide for all Zoroastrians and non-Zoroastrians who are interested. They have a site called Ahura Mazda. Ahura Mazda. And when you go into the site, you see this beautiful ancient calendar. And you can consider this a user's manual for the coming generations. So what we are going to talk about is the Parsi feast, or the Parsi Bhonu, and Ahura Mazda, and the traditions and the rituals. Zoroastrian history is an interesting and an ancient one. What is amazing is this community is a really small community to the point where I think they are now almost an endangered species. The Parsis, with Parsi, which means of Persia, the culture dates back to the 7th century when the followers of the prophet Zarathustra fled from Persia to avoid persecution by the Arab invaders. When I was in school, we heard the story of the Dastoors coming to the court of the king, and the king showing them a bowl of milk, indicating it was full, and then responding by adding the sugar where the milk doesn't spill out of the bowl, but it's sweeter. So I think I must have heard that story in fifth grade. It has stayed with me for many, many decades. They settled in 936, Common Era, I believe, in the west coast of India at a place called Sanjan. And has always been fascinated, they have their fire temple called the Gyari. And, you know, it was a fascinating but elusive place. So we have with us Mrs. Sharnaz Pettigara and Prezen Patel, the mother-daughter duo. And Prezen Patel is a trained chef, and she has this wonderful site called the Babi Bride. And it makes me smile every time I read it. Bawibride. We are going to ask her why she named it. It's obviously, we can see why, but you will know why she named it that way. Mrs. Pettigara, Prezen, welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, Vilasi. It's nice to be here.
I'm glad.
Thank you, Vilasi, for making us come over the show.
And, you know, I'm thrilled that you can. And I believe that we have an acknowledgement to make. You have you are a great supporter of the leukemia and, you know, the cancer prevention initiatives in Auckland, I believe, and a survivor yourself. A survivor yourself. I read it a few hours ago, and I said I cannot let the show go without acknowledging that. So
that's all God's grace, I can say.
Indeed. You know, you grew up in the Parsi community in Bombay, or what is now Mumbai, right?
Yes.
And My acquaintance has been with the communities based out of Gujarat and elsewhere. Can you tell me something about life as a Parsi girl growing up in Mumbai all those years ago?
Okay. I'm 52 today, and if I go back to 50 years before, from 1960, I have grown up in quite a conservative family. And we did not live in the common the bags and the colonies where most of the Parsis live, but we lived in a small building with 27 neighbors. So it was more of a chawl type building those days, you know, not closed apartments. We had common galleries and common. So we have grown up, the whole building was like a small family, and you know, but my mom and dad, my dad was a bit on the orthodox side, so we have grown up with lots of strict things that we have to do this and we have to do that. Of course, today I'm thankful to him for certain things, but he has given us a lot of guidance, making us look at the tenets of the religion and also telling us some wise things which we need to follow, why we are born, why we are why these religions are there. He has never taught us to unframe any other religion. Growing up as a Parsi, we always thought that our religion is based on three things: good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. So in Gujarati, it is called as Humatta, Hukatta, and Havarasta. Yeah. So right as a small child, we were taught to sit and pray with the family, and daddy always used to say, a family that prays together stays together. So we have, as little children, we have always learned to pray. Of course, my family has two brothers who, and my older brother is far more into the, into the religious aspect of being a Parsi. But he's like a totally, totally full Parsi, I can say, you know. I'm having moved to the West, I have changed my ideas, to live and let live people. But that's all right. But we have all learned, our religion teaches you to be good beings, you know. First, be good beings and another. And then, being good beings as, while following the tenets of the religion. Am I answering you correctly, Vilasi, or
you're answering me beautifully. It led me to the thought. You know, I found that the excerpt from your site which said, man's unique spiritual quest is linked to the preservation and promotion of the wise Lord's seven creations: the sky, the waters, the earth, the plants, the cattle, the man, and fire. It feels like they were the first believers in preservation of earth and preventing, climate change problems so many centuries ago. And the fire is the physical representation of order, truth, and righteousness. So what was the spoken language in your house and in the community?
In my house, I'm a Zoroastrian, but my dad was an Irani Zoroastrian, and my mom was a Parsi Zoroastrian. Do you know anything about that?
No, tell me about that.
Oh, that's, I myself don't know, but from what I understand from dad, certain group of Zoroastrians, when they came from Iran first, they came in a bit early and then they were the Iranis, and then the next group which came, I don't know how much of it is true, but I'm just telling you, this is what I was told, and then there was a next group which came, and they settled down a month later, so they became in as Parsis, you know? So there's not much difference. We still speak Gujarati, and the Iranis settled down in India or in Mumbai, most of them speak Persian. So my grandmother and my grandfather used to speak Persian and a little bit of Farsi, but unfortunately I have not learned Persian, but I just know a few words which Dada and grandparents used to speak, you know? Just very few words, but I wish I would have got an opportunity to learn Persian because it's such a beautiful language. And then at home, because mom was a Parsi, so we started talking in Gujarati. But even today, no matter where we studied and all, my dad made sure that at home we talk in our language, no talking in English. In fact, as little children, he had put little banners at home, no talking in English at home, You go to convent school, you talk to friends, you do whatever you want, talk in English, but at home you'll talk in your mother tongue, which was Gujarati. So we adopted Gujarati as our mother tongue.
What is the language of the prayers?
The original prayers were written in the Avesta language, which my husband, Sarosh, has studied in his school.
Oh.
Yeah. Where I studied, because he studied in a Parsi school, so they had this option of studying Avesta language or Marathi, and he picked up the Avesta language. He thought that that would be a good language to speak, you know, learn something about our forefathers. But unfortunately, where I studied, I didn't have this language. So our prayers, original prayers, were written in the Avesta language.
So,
and then to suit the community, they had been translated into Gujarati, and like, you know, now there are English books available because children settling down in West have also lost track of the Gujarati language, you know.
Right,
so when I was teaching a year in New Zealand, when I was teaching my prayer classes, I made sure that we talk in Gujarati at the class. I tried to keep that this alive, you know, that wherever we are, our roots are very important, like. But I don't know how much of it is being followed now, because I've finished with the classes last 6 years ago.
Huh. Maybe it's time for another one, because your site is beautiful. I learned more from it than I had ever known. And I think I hadn't found your site, I wouldn't have really found much. So we are going to take a tiny break, Mrs. Pettigera, and present. We will come back for our second segment. Folks, you are listening to The Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals. I'm Vilasi Venkatachalam. We are exploring the Parsi community, their cuisine, their culture, their celebrations. And we have with us Prezin Patel and Sharnaz Pettigera. So we will be right back in a few seconds, I hope, in a minute. So please check out Ahura Mazda, ahuramazda.com.
You're listening to Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals with Vilasi Venkatachalam on the Woohoo Radio Network. Vilasi is a troubadour on a quest for stories of secret cuisines and sacred rituals. Her mission is to do old things in new ways and new things in old ways. She believes in churning delightful, useful things from a brew of art and science, ancient and evolving, old medicine and new cures. We'll be right back with more Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals. At Ancient Wisdom Modern Solutions, we rechart the route to wellness. Away from off-the-shelf programs, Vilasi and her team guide you through powerful self-directed experiences filled with discovery and delight. Our programs meet you where you are. They constantly reshape and retouch to stretch your evolution. We are your wellness guides and Sherpa. We take you on virtual safaris through cradles of cuisines, cultures, and cures. You create an inspired palette with your chosen keepsakes of healing scents and flavors, cuisines, and practices. We bring our craft, knowledge, and tools. You taste, test, and direct your own transformation. You become the architect of your own vitality. You become your own guru. Together, we do old things in new ways and new things in old ways. As we continue to transform the consciousness and culture of workplaces and communities, markets and makers, visit us at ancientwisdom-modernsolutions.com and listen to our show, Sacred Cuisines and Sacred Rituals, on the Woohoo Radio Network, Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Season's greetings. I'm Vilasi Venkatachalam, and I want to introduce you to a beautiful book, a moving tribute, a multimedia project all wrapped in one by Natasha Bowens, The Color of Food, filled with beautiful vivid portraits, stories, ancient farming techniques that have stood the test of time of the Black, Native, Asian, Latino, and Latina farmers of America. My invitation to you is to support this project. You can pre-order the book, The Color of Food, Race, Resilience, and Farming, at thecolorofood.org, thecolorofood.org, and look up Natasha Bowens at Brown Girl Farming. I wish you and yours a wonderful season and a divine 2015. Thank you.
Welcome back to Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals with your host, Vilasi Venkatachalam. Every week, Vilasi delights in the discovery of new approaches to ancient rituals. Together, you'll explore cuisines, cultures, cures, and creativity from around the world. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals. I am Vilasi Venkatachalam. And today we have with us Shernaz Petigara and Prazin Patel of AhuraMazda.com. And, oh, what a, it's this must be sacred. I hear a bell. And Prazin Patel of BhaviBride.com. Welcome, Prazin and Shernaz.
Yeah, so thank you.
This segment is actually a mix of both of you. It's the cuisine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to know about my experience in a Parsi wedding feast was they had a really beautiful menu for us, but there I saw people sitting in a corner, the close relatives, the bride and groom with banana leaves. And I said, this is like a year wedding, but it was really special. And I want it. Is any feast called Bonu, or is it the wedding feast that's called Bonu?
So it's actually, Bonu means food in Gujarati. So, mm-hmm. When I've started sort of talking about Bonu, I've just taken that Gujarati word and trying to make it like popular. So I think a wedding, all food is basically called Bonu, to answer your question.
Okay. That was my, so you have these wonderful pop-up events called Jamba Chaloji. tell us more about that, and then we will go on to signature cuisines and distinct flavors. But, you know, you have the most intriguing ways of serving Parsi food, and I understand that your central kitchen is now in Dadar. Tell us more about that.
So before that, I'll just take a step back and sort of say how I started Bhavi Bride, because I think that's essential to answer your question. The reason, like you said, people will find out why it's called Bhavi Bride. So I'll share the secret. Bhavi is actually a colloquial term for a female Parsi. So that's Bhavi. And the bride came about because until I got married, I didn't know how to cook a single Parsi dish at all. So basically, the story goes that, you know, I got married and I moved away from mum from New Zealand and came back to India. And I used to make all these secret calls to her at night because, of course, I had to impress all the in-laws and I didn't know how to cook any Parsi food. And then at one point, I got tired of writing on pieces of paper. So I started the blog more as a sort of like a personal diary for myself to record all these recipes and stories that mum was sharing with me. And then you know, I just got such a great response because I think there hasn't been someone who's sort of taking and shining the spotlight on Parsi food. So I immediately got like quite a lot of interest in people going, no, you have to talk about this dish and that dish. And so it sort of snowballed from there. And it was actually all my readers who convinced me that I had to start like a small catering company or just start serving Parsi food. That's how it started in August of 2013. And what I've been doing the whole of last year and more so early this year is really doing quite a lot of these pop-up events. And the reason behind these pop-up events for me is to really evangelize Parsi food. Like there was a point where everyone in Bombay knew who the Parsis were. They knew about our food just because there were so many Irani cafes. You know, I think in the 1980s, there was about 300 Irani cafes. And now if you see, there's only like 14 or 15 left. So the goal with these pop-up events is to really like evangelize Parsi food and, you know, showcase, because everyone knows about dansak and they know about patrani machi, but they don't know about like curry rice or kebabs, you know, or mawa cakes. So it was really about taking these lesser known dishes and bringing them back into the spotlight.
So you're bringing me to the next one. Let's talk signature dishes. And call them by the name that you would call them and give us an English description so that people would sort of know what they're looking for when they go to your site.
Okay. So I think one of the dishes, which is, I guess all Parsis are known for, is the dansak. So I can't go away without mentioning that because I'll face persecution myself.
I would like to interrupt here. I think yes. One of the signature dishes you can mention is the dandal patio, because when we start feeding our children, we first put the morsel of dandal in their mouth. So I would say dandal patio is the signature dish, followed by dansak.
Aha. Okay, so we want a description of both.
Okay,
Pazen will tell you that.
Okay. So dandar patio, dandar is dandar is basically like a lentil dish, and this is made with plain two dal lentils, so mm-hmm. and turmeric, and so basically it's just a plain simple dal, and we just do like a quick tarka to it, made with jeera and garlic and some ghee, and mm-hmm. so the reason it's served at birthdays and to children is just because you know, it's quite bland and everyone can sort of eat it, so mm-hmm. So that's the danda, but obviously it's quite plain to eat by itself, and as Parsis we like to sort of have a little bit of meat or fish in all the food that we eat. Mm-hmm. Most of the food that we eat, I think my mom will disagree because she's a vegetarian now, and I'm still a total meatitarian. But basically, so patio is this piquant tomato gravy. So it's very sweet and sour at the same time, mm-hmm. which is very typical of all Parsi food. Most of our food tends to be both sweet and sour at the same time. And so patio is a sweet and sour tomato dish, and normally made with prawns. But we also have another version, which is the lagan no patio, as in the wedding patio. And that uh-huh. one is actually made with coconut and palm fruit, because obviously, if you're serving it at weddings, you don't want to give any old fish. So pomfret is, you know, like the queen of fish in Mumbai. So that's the fish that they serve in the patio over there. So that's a little bit about the dandar patio. And dansak is basically a combination of three kinds of dals and also four kinds of vegetables. And it's all sort of slow cooked together. And normally it's made with meat. So the reason I've done a little bit of study into the etymology of the word, and the reason it's called dansak is because if we go back to the Gujarat coast where we used to stay, you know, in the olden days, people used to exchange sacks of grains or dal as currency. So so that's where dhan, because dhan in Gujarati means money. So mm-hmm. that's actually translates back to dal, and sak means vegetables. So because this was mixed with dal and vegetables, so that's why it's called dansak, while the other one is called dandar because it is just the dal. So I think that explains the difference. And so dansak is traditionally served in a Parsi house mostly on Sundays. It's sort of like the dish which you eat, and then some people
all
have
Parsi men after eating dansak will snore away for afternoon nap.
But actually, so dansak is not served at weddings or happy occasions, because it is like when someone dies in Parsis, we don't eat meat for 4 days, and then we return back to meat on the fourth day with dansak. So that's why on birthdays and weddings we wouldn't serve dansak. But obviously we can't stay away from it, so we call it palau dar, and it's the same dal, but because it's called palau dar, we can now eat it. So that's the that's the other secret.
This is wonderful. So what would you say are the really distinct Parsi flavors?
So I think there's two or three things which are quite distinct. One is, like I said, you know, what we like to do and make everything sort of sweet and sour. So most of our dishes will have a little bit of jaggery, but then they'll also have sugarcane vinegar. And so that mm-hmm. balances mm-hmm. out the sweet and sour. So those are dishes like sali boti, mm-hmm. which is again like a meat cooked in like a sweet and sour tomato gravy. We've also got the sasni machi. So that is basically our fish, which is made in like a white sauce. And that sauce is sort of like sweet, spicy, and sour all at the same time. So I think that's one. The other point of the cuisine is really, it's very meat oriented, traditionally. So most of our dishes are quite meaty. In fact, I get quite scared when I get, vegetarians inquiring for catering orders, which are like 8 or 9 courses. And, I typically call my mom. I'm like, oh my God, what do I cook? I don't know. So I think that's another one. And then the other bit is we really love our eggs. So I think one of the things I have as a sort of like a thank you card, which I use, is when in doubt, break an egg on it, because we typically, have like sali peridu, which is basically like wafers with tomato and like an egg on top, or any kind of leftover you have in at home. Basically, the solution is just to crack an egg on it. So I think those are the three main characteristics of Parsi food.
So we have about a minute to go. So when we come back, I want to assemble this and say, what is a meal in a Parsi house? What does a meal in a Parsi household look like, the whole plate? And then we'll talk more about traditions and, you know, special holidays that I had never really heard about. And it's almost as if we have been hovering on the periphery, knowing but not knowing. So I hear that there is Navjot, we know New Year, and there are ceremonies like Sari Perwanu. And so we'll come back for that. Folks, you're listening to The Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals. I'm Vilasi Venkatachalam, and we have with us Prezen Patel and Sharnaz Patigara of BaviBride.com, BaviBride.com, and AhuraMazda.com. We will be right back for more.
You're listening to Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals with Vilasi Venkatachalam on the Woohoo Radio Network. Vilasi is a troubadour on a quest for stories of secret cuisines and sacred rituals. Her mission is to do old things in new ways and new things in old ways. She believes in churning delightful, useful things from a brew of art and science, ancient and evolving, old medicine and new cures. We'll be right back with more Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals.
Are you fascinated by the stories behind the stories, the people behind their masks, the truth about people's failures and redemptions in both their business and personal lives? Then Off the Record Secrets Of with host Judy Schreiner is for you. It's people's secrets that make them interesting, but very few folks are willing to reveal them unless they trust that their information will be treated with accuracy, fairness, and respect. People have been entrusting their secrets to longtime business journalist Judy Schreiner for the last 25 years, and now she's bringing her expertise and impressive contact list. Tune in and call in as host Judy Schreiner talks to guests off the record as they reveal new secrets each Tuesday at noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central. Join us for Healing with the Marijke Method. This is an amazingly informative show to help heal people as well as their horses, dogs, and cats. This show inspires and empowers people to take charge of their own health and their animals' health using the power of diet, nutrition, natural medicines, and lifestyle to heal a variety of health problems. Learn how food impacts all physical and emotional health conditions and how diet and natural medicines are used to heal the body, mind, and spirit. Marijke is a health and nutrition specialist, homeopathic practitioner, a gifted medical intuitive and healer, and an author and educator with over 2 decades of experience in clinical practice for people and their pets. Join our host, Marijke van de Water, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here on the Rockstar Radio Network.
Welcome back to Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals with your host, Vilasi Venkatachalam. Every week, Vilasi delights in the discovery of new approaches to ancient rituals. Together, you'll explore cuisines, cultures, cures, and creativity from around the world. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We are listening to the Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals. I'm Vilasi Venkatachalam, and today we have with us Prasen Patel and Sharnaz Patigara of BawiBride.com and AhuraMazda.com. AhuraMazda and BawiBride. If you Google them, if you just Google these words, they will be the first person to show up, the first names to show up. So we are exploring the Parsi cuisine, culture, and celebrations. It is an illustrious, but a small community that is getting smaller still. So we want to capture them for history. We hope that this record and their voices stay for many, many, many centuries that come. So welcome back, Prasen and Mrs. Patigara.
Thank you.
So there are two parts to this. A meal in a Parsi household. So, Prasen, you tell me yours. And Mrs. Patigara, I want to hear about what it was like when you were a child. So let's go with Prasen first.
Okay, so I guess my family, where I'm married into now, you know, we're like a typical big, happy, food-loving Parsi family. In fact, my father-in-law always tells me, oh, Prasen, thank God you like food, because I don't know if you would have gelled with our family otherwise. So I think that's a, that's a characteristic of most Parsi families. But a typical meal in our house would be... So most of us, I mean, in my family, we mainly do dinner together as a family. And so it would probably be like meat, kind of like a dal or a curry with rice. And then we also have what we call, what Parsis call a little bit of ramakra. Now, ramakra actually means toys.
You're right.
In Gujarati. But what Parsi men mean by it is that they want something else meaty on the side, like a kebab or cutlets, which they can have with it. And so it's called ramakra because, you know, it's like a little treat that you get to have with your meal. So obviously forgetting that meat is still in the main dish as well. So we've got like a curry rice, which is meat or chicken. And then we've got like kebabs or cutlets, which is typically had with rotis. And then in my house, we're big dessert lovers. So typically there'll also be something sweet to have. And we have a couple of courses in that as well. So, you know, we've either got like a jelly or a custard, which we have first. And then there's obviously like the normal stuff like chocolate or dry fruits. So that's a typical meal in my house. I'm sure my mom is going to give me a lecture right after this call and be like, what are you doing? But I'll let her answer her part. I'm sure hers is much healthier.
So Mrs. Pettigar, take us back to your childhood. What was a meal in your Parsi household?
Yeah, I can say we came from a very simple family where we couldn't afford lots of luxuries, but my mom definitely made a lot of good home-cooked food, so we have always eaten good food. And as Prasen explained, that this ramakra has been like even my brothers, I was basically more on the vegetarian side even as a child, so I never asked for ramakras, but, you know, like coming from a family where daddy had very limited means. So we always used to share the ramakras. And I remember the days when my brothers used to make a deal with me that if you give us two ramakras, I will give you this. You know, so we have grown up on the dining table sharing food, like sharing the ramakras, which Prasen described as the meat pieces or the kebabs or the this. So that is my explanation as a child. But as a child, I have also seen mummy cook a lot of sev, which is the vermicelli, and the ravo, which is called the semolina. So for breakfast, like bread and butter was only given to us when we grew up. Like as children, we have always had sev or ravo or ravani kanji for breakfast. Just have the ravani kanji. That is like, you know, semolina. Sorted in ghee and add water to it, then add milk and sugar and a bit of vanilla essence. So it used to take, like, substitute with you, the milk part, like I never used to like to drink milk as a child. So mommy used to make this and give it to me because there was water and semolina. So, you know, like it was another way of putting milk into my body.
Yes.
So that's Ravo, Sev, and then we have typical Parsi dishes, which are long lost and forgotten, but there are some people who are still making it. Like I've told Persian, we have shared the Dani Puri and the Vasanu, which is made mainly in the winter, then the Gaur Papri, and quite a few. There is a lot of Parsi dishes which I can speak of, and your show will go on and on, Velasi.
Go ahead, speak of it, because this I may not get a chance to hear about it again. So let me hear the Parsi dishes that have been forgotten.
Oh, okay. Pazena, what about the Lagannu custard that we make? The Lagannu custard and, like, you know, there's this jelly that we make with three layers. And, like, those are all typical Parsi food which you can see, which I have grown up with. Like, mm-hmm. there was this, I don't know how to say, what is it? What is ghas called? Is it the binder thing that we use nowadays?
Ghas?
It's basically
gelatin.
Right. Okay.
So those days, you know how these ready packets were not available. So Mama used to make fruit pulp, put it into gelatin, and make a jelly. Then put little fruit on the top. Then again another base with another color. And we used to have this fruit jelly with just like a very little bit of ice cream on the top. Because as I told you, Velasi, we came from a family where, like, we were not rich enough to have lots of exclusive food, but my dad made sure that we got all the good food. And one thing I would love to say as a child is the patties, the cutlets and the patties that we have grown up with. So the chutney idanu patties and the kimanu patties. So the chutney idanu patties is like a potato crust and filled up with the chutney and a half and a boiled egg inside. And then and then again coated with semolina and egg and deep fried. In fact, me and Persian have made, when we came to New Zealand, chutney, irana patties and cutlets was our first income because it took me a while to settle down with a job and all that. So we started making cutlets and patties and selling it to the community over here. And we brought our first TV from the money that we made.
Brilliant. This is awesome. How brilliant.
Catering really runs, food and catering for Parsi food really sort of runs through our generations. Like my grandmom, like mom's mom, used to send like dabbas, and then my mom did it. We sell cutlets and now me. So, yeah, it's fun. connects all of us.
All right. Culinary ingenuity and entrepreneurship runs in the family. That is wonderful. So tell me about, what are Jashans in Gumber? I understand that it's originally an agrarian community and all the seasons are celebrated. So what are Jashans and what is a Gumber?
Yeah, Jashan is like a Thanksgiving ceremony or a celebration of an important event. You know, like if you buy a new house, and then we will have a little jashan to say thanks to the Lord for giving us the money and, like, you know, giving us the energy to buy a new house. So jashan is it is performed by two or more priests. So it need not be performed in a fire temple. It can be performed in a house or in a hall. But we have to purify the place a bit, like, you know, just clean it and all that. And then people get this ceremony performed in their homes and offices once a year as Thanksgiving and benediction. And then it's like followed in celebration with well-wishers coming, like, you know, so while the ceremony is on, the non-Parsis don't attend the ceremony because just of the prayers, I guess. But otherwise, once the ceremony is over, then, like, you know, everybody comes. So I remember where I used to work in Ingersoll Ranch for many years, we were like more than 35 Parsis. So it's 1 month of the year, which is like before the monsoon season starts. We have a Dashan where, like, you know, we pray to the Lord that please give us enough rains this season so that our crop grows. We have enough water supply in our rivers and lakes. So that is a jashan which is done for, like, you know, good days. And there is a jashan that done also in memory of the departed souls. So it is almost in the same lines, but the prayers are a little different.
Okay.
So basically, it's Thanksgiving in like for a good event, and in a sad event, it's like, you know, it's Thanksgiving to the Lord, saying that the soul did not suffer and it has gone back to its home, to its original home where it came from.
And so, that's the Gumbars.
And like the Gumbars, did you say you want to know about the Gumbars also?
Yes, yes, I do. I do.
Okay, so the Gumbars are the important dates. 1 minute. I'm just trying to recollect what I can tell you about Gumbars in short. Yeah, yeah, they are like when, you know, when we used to live, and they are like six holidays, six Gumbars in a year. Mm-hmm. And they are like, the first Gumbar is the mid-spring, then there is the mid-summer, then there's the harvest Gumbar, and like mid-winter, and the vernal equinox. This, I think, a forgotten one. It's mainly to do with the cattle. Yeah. Yeah. So there are six Gumbars which we celebrate. And like, I don't know how to explain you, Velasi, but it is like,
is it,
we have got
12 that...
months a year and 30 days of month. So in the 30 days, there will be one day of the month which coincides with the name of the month, you know? So that's how we have picked. So there is 1 month of the year which is like for the cattle, then 1 month which is for water, 1 month which is for fire, as you already have done a little bit of history, as you have already done a little bit of research on our this. So those main days are the Gumbars which we celebrate, like. And like the most important festival could be 21st March, which we celebrate as Navruz. So that's also, that's the vernal equinox.
We will we'll come back. We'll come back in about a minute. And what I noticed from what you're saying is the Gumbars are, it's almost like you celebrate the elements of nature, the harvests, the equinoxes, and you're really tuned in with the elements. So we'll be right back. Folks, you're listening to the Sacred Cuisines and Sacred Rituals. And we have with us the gracious Parzin Patel and Sharnaz Bhatigara. Please check them out at bobbybride.com and ahuramazda.com. We'll be right back. You are listening to the Sacred Cuisines and Sacred Rituals.
You're listening to Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals with Velasi Venkatachalam on the Woohoo Radio Network. Velasi is a troubadour on a quest for stories of secret cuisines and sacred rituals. Her mission is to do old things in new ways and new things in old ways. She believes in churning delightful, useful things from a brew of art and science, ancient and evolving, old medicine and new cures. We'll be right back with more Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals.
Have you ever wondered if you're normal or why you feel distant from your partner? Then join us for Sex Talk with Lou with your host, Lou Padgett, on TogiNet Wednesday nights, 9, 8 Central. Do you want to recreate a truly connected relationship or wonder, how do I tell my kids about things? Join Lou Padgett, one of the world's best-selling authors in the field of sexuality, a certified sex educator and sought-after expert for all media, and her renowned expert guests as they discuss anything and everything about sex that impacts our lives and our families' lives. For more on Lou, check out her website, loupadgett.com. This is the show where the best experts in the field of sexuality and sexual health can finally give you the answer to that question. Join us for Sex Talk with Lou, with your host, Lou Padgett, Wednesday nights at 9, 8 Central on TogiNet.com.
It's merging and
heard. Have you noticed that no matter how carefully you put the Christmas lights away, they still come out all kringle-crangled and jitterty-jitterty the next year? Christmas tree lights were invented in 1882 by Thomas Edison, and by 1900, these miniature versions of his electric light bulb were being advertised to the public. In 1895, Grover Cleveland proudly sponsored the first electrically lit Christmas tree in the White House, featuring more than 100 multicolored lights. By the next Christmas, members of high society were hosting flambustious Christmas tree parties. Of course, in those early days, the services of a wireman had to be obtained, as many people had considered electricity as a bit of a bugaboo.
It's marching day.
To all our armed forces, men and women serving at home and abroad, have a wonderful holiday.
Welcome back to Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals with your host, Vilasi Venkatachalam. Every week, Vilasi delights in the discovery of new approaches to ancient rituals. Together, you'll explore cuisines, cultures, cures, and creativity from around the world. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals. I'm Vilasi Venkatachalam, and we are exploring the Parsi cuisine, culture, and celebrations today with Parzin Patel and Sharnaz Petigara of BaviBride.com and AhuraMazda.com. Welcome back. In this segment, I wanted to ask about the weddings. And also, something interesting. I didn't know that there was a Sari Pervanu ceremony. I was really curious. I'm fixating on that ever since I found that word. So I wanted to ask you about that. So Navroz, Sari Pervanu says, and wedding. So we have about 12 minutes and hack it in, ladies, as much as you can tell me.
Prasen, do you want to speak about what is Navroz?
So Navroz is basically an initiation ceremony that is done when a child is about 7. So it's typically done when girls are 7 and boys when they're 9. And it's basically to initiate the child into the Zoroastrian faith. And all Zoroastrians, all Parsis, wear two things on our body at all times. That's the sadra and the kusti. So the sadra is made of muslin, and it's meant to act as something that protects you, and the kusti is a woven thread made with sheep's wool or sheep or lamb's wool, and so basically it's an integral part of our religion, and you know, we sort of tie and untie the kusti every day. So that's the ceremony where we teach our children the prayers and get them into the faith. And
it would be like tying the kusti three times around the waist is like having good thoughts, speak only good words, and perform only good deeds. And like the kusti has four knots, so which they signify that God has created the human body from four elements, which is like fire, water, air, and earth. Mm. So the kusti is tied on the waist. And it symbolizes that one should always take the middle path to life, you know, not extremes, this side and not to the side of. So that's what the sudra and the kusti. And I think we are very, very lucky to have that costume, because if you had time, I can almost tell you quite a few miracles which we have faced with the sudra and kusti on our body. Uh-huh. It's nothing to do with anybody who doesn't wear it, but it's like, you know, having grown up as a Zoroastrian, how powerful the costume is on our body.
Yes, because it brings all the goodwill and prayers to bear in that ritual. It must make it sacred. So if you have, and so which means that twice a day, you have very clear intentions about what you want to be and feel, and how you want to act throughout the day, and how you want to end your day.
But nowadays it is cut down to twice a day, morning first thing and even night before going to bed. But at least in my household, and I'm sure even Parzen is following, it is three times a day definitely, like first thing in the morning, then after your shower, and before going to bed.
Mm.
We do perform our kusti prayers three times a day, definitely.
How wonderful. So if Navroz and the kusti initiation starts at 7 and 9, when does the Sari Pervanu happen?
Sari Pervanu is just, you know, like, as you know, that we Parsis love to celebrate anything and everything. So this is just a little ceremony made up by, I don't know who, the olden ladies, but this was before the girl attains puberty, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have this, like, so, oh, now my girl will be a woman soon. So we just, like, you know, as olden days, girls used to not grow up till 15, 16, but today's children really grow up very quickly. So we have this little sari pirvanu ceremony where seven married women will, like, you know, do a little tilak to the girl and tell her that you will soon be a woman, darling, and this is going to happen. So we put the little sari around her. This, so it's a new sari, and the ritual actually, you know, on the Navjot day, when the girl... is initiated into the Navjot, we keep a little sari in the space for her. So that sari, most of the parents preserve it and make the girl wear it on the sari pirvanu day. You know, the first sari is the sari which is kept on the Navjot day for the girl.
So
when the Navjot ceremony is over, the priest will put the sari around her shoulders and say, like, soon you'll, this is, like, today is a Navjot, soon you'll grow up to be a woman, and then a woman will get married into the community. So that's the significance of the sari. And then, as usual, it's followed by lots of fun and frolic, that, yay, my girl has grown big. And, like,
don't forget about the food.
Yes, of course. So we are coming to the food. So tell us about the food, and then tell us about weddings. So the food, the rituals, everything.
I think one of the other really fun things we celebrate is the Besna ceremony. So this is done when a child learns how to sit. So we basically take a whole lot of mithai and make the child sit on the mithai. And so that only sort of lasts for about like 7 minutes. And after that, we all get to eat. So that's the fun part, which is the common thread for all our festivals. And talking about the wedding food, basically, Velasi, there's one of the cool things is most of the wedding menus don't really change because Parsis want to have, you know, like the set thing. So it's done on a banana leaf, like you rightly pointed out. And it's typically a three-course meal, but it could be more. And so it's done with chicken, meat, and fish. So you'll typically have like a sali chicken or an atheli chicken, which means a marinated chicken. And then you have like a meat course, which could be, you know, like a... It could be like a daba ghosh, or it could be like a meat cooked in a white sauce. Or if they can't afford that, then the meat is in the palau dar, which is served at the end. So then there is the chicken, then there is normally fish. And over there you get my favorite patrani machi, which is fish coated in chutney and wrapped in banana leaves and steamed. Or you get the sasni machi. So there's always just one of two of those options. Though on my wedding, I couldn't decide, so I had both. And then obviously palau dar, which is that same dal which we talked about, the same dansak dal. But over here, the meat is actually in the rice and not in the dal. So that's why it's called palau dar as compared to dansak. And also, like I said, theoretically, we can't have dansak on a happy occasion, so that's why we make it into palau dar. So that's a typical wedding feast, yeah.
So tell me, describe a wedding ceremony.
Cool. So
then do you want to talk about it because you have just quit recently?
This is a test, Velasi.
Yes, you know what? I'm really enjoying this test. Go ahead, my dear. You have to hear how much you remember.
So typically a Parsi wedding is done after sunset, and that is that custom comes from us being on the Gujarat coast, where the king told us, you know, like, we will accept you into our community, but you have to make sure your weddings are done after sunset. So in Persia, they used to actually be in the morning, but now most Parsis will get married after sunset because that's something that's carried through since we sort of moved to India. So it's done after sunset, and before that, we basically have like a cleansing ceremony, which is called the Nan, as in the bath, where the boy and the girl are separate, and they both do this. So the priest comes and prays to you and sort of like prepares you. And over there, two things we have, we're meant to chew on pomegranate leaves, and then we're also given a very small sip of cow's urine. But this cow is a very sacred cow, which is
a cow, it is the white bull's urine.
Yeah, sorry, the white bull's urine. Yeah, and but this is a very sacred bull which has been around you know, our fire temples in Advaita, so it comes comes from there. So we have that, and so we do that cleansing ceremony first, and then obviously the bride and groom get married. And tradition actually says that once once your engagement ceremony, in Parsis, the engagement ceremony only happens 3 or 4 days before your wedding. So actually after that, you're not meant to see the bride and the groom are not meant to see each other. So even during this cleansing thing, you know, the bride and groom do it completely separately. And then the groom goes on the stage, and there's like a white cloth kept between us, which sort of separates us. And obviously then the bride walks down the aisle, goes onto the stage, and all this time she can't see the groom. And we're surrounded by 7 married women. And basically they have this thread which, so while the priest is praying, they have this thread which is wrapped around our hands, and then 7 times it goes in a circle. And so again, that's meant to, you know, reinstate our faith about like good thoughts, good words, good deeds. So all this time the priest is praying and the married woman. So in Hindus, you know how there's the 7 pharaohs? Over here, we sort of like pass the thread 7 times. And then the fun part is that both the bride and the groom have a fistful of rice in their hands. So when the thread passes the 7th time, the cloth will drop. And apparently tradition states that whoever throws the rice first is sort of the leader in the wedding. So at my wedding.
The rice first.
It was a camera cut finish. And so me and my husband actually started arguing on the stage itself as to who had thrown the rice first.
That is a beautiful story. So we are coming towards the end of the show, and I think we have barely a minute left. So I want to thank you both. And we hope that we will hear more. So this is for our audience. I'm sure Mrs. Sharnaz Patikara and Prezen Patel join us in wishing you that your palate be inspired, that your feet follow timeless wisdom, that your imagination defy you, that you are an architect of your own vitality, that you heal yourself, you teach yourself, you do old things in new ways and new things in old ways, and finally and perpetually be your own guru. I'm Vilasi Venkatachalam, and I wish you and yours a divine week of delight and discovery. Please do come back and join us on Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. This is the Secret Cuisines and Sacred Rituals at toginet.com at the Global Broadcasting Networks. I thank Sharnaz Patel and Prezen Patel, Sharnaz Patikara and Prezen Patel from the bottom of my heart. The mother-daughter duo have outdone themselves. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vilas.
Thank you, Vilas.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Until next week, let us be memory keepers of our ingenuity, wisdom, and shared heritage. In the meantime, we want to know about the beauty you love and the 100 ways in which you kiss your hallowed.